Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the French Connections Thursday edition. Today's date is June 1st. It is Thursday, June 1st, 2006. Of course, my name is Daryl Bradford Smith. It's wonderful to have you all with me today. We've got an interview with a very important friend of mine. I've had him on my show on many occasions, and we've talked privately on many occasions. His name is Kevin Cease. He is running for senator of the great state of Maryland, and in fact, Kevin has been putting together a coalition effort here that with the Green Party, Libertarians, and Populist parties of Maryland. Of course, the Democrats within Maryland don't want that to happen, so they've given him a little bit of trouble about it. So we're going to start off with welcoming Kevin. Hello, Kevin. It's great to have you on the French Connection.
Glad to be on. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, we talked privately, and you made mention of the fact that when you tried to do something with all three parties at once, they actually called into a special session something to block you. What happened with that?
Well, you know, I think there's a real distrust of the two parties these days. If you look at polls for the first time in the history of the NBC Wall Street Journal poll, both parties have higher negative ratings and positive ratings.
Yeah.
And when you look at the popularity of Congress, it's in the 20s, lower than Bush even, it's in the low 20s. And when you ask voters, do you feel represented by your federal official, only 17% of Americans say yes to that. So they know that they, while they look strong on, they really have a very weak base of support.
Yeah.
And in Maryland, we've seen the people registering independent for the two parties going from single digits to almost 20% in the last decade. So one out of five voters in Maryland now is registered independent of the two parties. So I think they are in some serious trouble with those realities. And so I thought what I tried to do in this campaign was to create a unity campaign and get the nomination of multiple third parties. And you mentioned the Green, Populist, and Libertarian Party. I've already gotten the Libertarian Party nomination. I expect to get the Green nomination this weekend and the Populist nomination the weekend after.
Mm-hmm.
And I also have Democrats and Republicans and Independents on my campaign committee. So we're calling it a campaign that's Unity for Change.
Uh-huh.
And so we're trying to get that idea out there. And what happened in the last weekend of the legislative session, about a month ago, actually mid-April, the Democrat-dominated legislature, which is a veto-proof Democrat majority, passed what's called emergency legislation. Now, emergency legislation is usually designed to, in fact, statutory required to be used to protect the health and safety of Marylanders. What it is as soon as it's passed, it becomes law without the governor's signature.
Mm-hmm.
And so it has a supermajority supporting it, and if it passes that way, then the governor does not get involved. The governor here in Maryland is a Republican. So in the last weekend of the session, they passed emergency legislation that was designed to keep me from having more than one ballot line. It requires that you be registered with one of the parties in order to get their nomination. And so you can only be registered with one party, so you can only get one party nomination. So that's the way they play it. Now, I'm going to still run under the banner of the three parties because I think it's important to get across the message to voters that, you know, I have the support of a broad range of constituents, from libertarians to greens to populists.
Yeah.
That's an important symbol for voters to take me seriously. It's hard to, you know, third-party candidates often aren't taken seriously, and I'm trying to rise above that challenge, which is not an easy thing to do. I'm going to run under those banners, but I'll pick the largest of the three parties, which is the Green Party, to be listed on the ballot if I'm forced to do so. I may litigate this question, you know, if I can find a lawyer who'll take it on, and we have a ground to litigate, we'll litigate this issue. But otherwise, if I'm forced to, I'll pick one party and still...
Well, Kevin, I got a question for you regarding these folks. I mean, it's pretty clear to anybody looking from the outside for any length of time, we know they're controlled. We know there's a lot of shenanigans going on with vote counting and black boxes and all kinds of nonsense.
Yeah.
The corruption going on in our election systems, how do you expect to get elected with the kind of stuff that we know is happening? I mean, this is not conspiracy theory.
That's something that really, you know, you have to think about when you're running for office, because you are fighting a corrupt system. And Maryland is one of the two states that votes statewide on paperless black box devolved machines. And so that's a great concern. And the Democratic Party, by the way, which dominates the state, has been blocking moves to the paper trail. So, you know, it is a concern. There's been, in Maryland, has a history of corruption, and that's not just, you know, since 2000, but much longer than that. In fact, in the 1990s, the Democrats seem to have stolen an election, involving a governor's race where the night of the vote the Republican was winning, then they found 10,000 more ballots in Baltimore City on the next day, and the Democrat won. So, you know, it's one of those kinds of things.
No surprises there, are there?
It's an arena to fight in, and if I get my message out, it's valuable. I've been fighting for paper trails. I've been fighting for transparent democracy, and that's part of the agenda I'm running on. And so it's a vehicle to get my message out and move the issue forward. And if things take off, and, you know, this country is facing some major potential catastrophes, economic, environmental, military, that could come up between now and November. So it's a very unpredictable time. And so it's important to be out there fighting.
Well, I think you're right about all of those things. Here's the interesting thing that I've discovered, Kevin. When we look at all of the political the two political party system that we've developed in America, because there's only one independent in the Senate and only a few of them in the House, what we've done is pretty much represented a single group. Because when I've looked behind the curtain to see who's pulling the levers, it seems to be a very powerful lobby or a small group of benign breath based. Lobbies, and you wrote something quite powerful about this group recently, and you also, said that it was time possibly to take a look at the way we've been supporting this this policy we've taken into Israel. You want to expand on that for a moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are some people behind the curtain. I think if you go to a group, a website like opensecrets.org, you can see where the money comes from politics, and it funds both political parties. So those who provide the gold make the rules, and I think that's true in politics as well. And I think that's one of the reasons why you see a divide between the leadership of both parties and the voters in both parties, wide chasm between what the voters want in the Democratic Party, what the Democratic leaders advocate, what the Republican base wants, and what the Republican leadership is advocating. So it's very interesting to see that kind of divide. But it's because of money. Money is in control of politics. And the article you're talking about was about a particular one aspect of that lobby, of that powerful special interest group, and that's the pro-Israeli lobby, the hard right pro-Israeli lobby. And the article, I think the one you saw, was about how they're pushing us into a military attack on Iran.
Yes, that's right.
I think what's interesting about the hard-right Israeli lobby is a couple things. First off, it only represents the views of most American Jews or Israelis.
That is a fact, and I've pointed that out repeatedly.
Yeah, and so it's a small group of people with money, and according to Richard Cohen of the Washington Post, he says that 65% of Democratic Party money comes from the hard-right Israeli lobby, and 35% the Republican money comes from the hard-right Israeli lobby. So they're a very powerful interest group. That's why in neither party do you hear any criticism of the Israeli policy toward Palestine, which should be looked at as a violation of international law, and the United States should be starting to say we cannot be complicit by underwriting with our tax dollars the violation of that international law. I mean, you look at Israel, it's a country the size of New Jersey, and it gets more in federal, in foreign aid from the United States than sub-Saharan Africa, Latin America, and the Caribbean combined. And this little country the size of New Jersey gets more than two continents combined. To me, that is by itself on its face hard to justify. Particularly with the problems that are faced in Latin America and Africa. And then it's even harder to justify when you start to talk about their policies toward the Palestinian people. We are complicit in that illegal occupation by underwriting it. We need to start to discuss that. We used to be able to avoid that issue because it was a tangent, you know, to our own foreign policy concerns, but now it's become central to our security because it's at the base. Our support, our one-sided support for Israel, is at the base of a lot of the security threats that we're facing, and there's a lot of good evidence that we got into the Iraq war because of the hard right, at least largely in part, you know, by the Israeli lobby. I think the military-industrial complex also, you know, supports that. The oil industry also supports that. So it's not just the Israeli lobby, but they certainly had an effect on it. And so I think we need to start to discuss these things because it's having a direct impact on everybody's lives in the United States.
Well, I think you're absolutely right on those points. And here's the interesting thing that we've discovered over with our research. We've got a group of very powerful people with an agenda, and that agenda is to it's certainly not in the best interest of the American people. First of all, you know they're spending us into a depression. The depression's on its way. Whether or not it'll be a complete collapse is still in the, you know, out in the ether there. And I'm taking a look at all of the things that are happening, Kevin. In my 50 years of living, I have never seen America so ill, so sick, so troubled, so corrupted, so so much. You know, these people have the hubris that I can't even imagine. I'm wondering, what do you think it's going to take? I mean, because I don't think electoral process is going to make it. It seems to me it's the right thing to do morally, but I don't know if it's going to really win, going to work. What do you think?
I think it's a big challenge. I'm not sure. I think there's a whole range of vehicles that need to pursue. You know, obviously education, working with the media, getting the message out, lobbying, electoral politics, it all has to be pursued. I mean, what's the choice? Revolution? Well, they got the guns and we don't. So that's not.
Well, we got 250 million of them in private hands there, Kevin.
Yeah, well, they got some pretty serious weapons I wouldn't want to be on the other side of, I'll tell you that. So,
well, it may end up coming to that. I hope that you're right, it doesn't. Here's the interesting thing. What kind of press coverage have you been afforded with them knowing that you are actually speaking out against the Israeli payment system and the rest of the messes? Have you been shunned by the mainstream media's coverage?
I think to a large degree I have, but I think that's going to change. I've talked to some pretty top political commentators. In fact, when I gave that speech about how the hard right Israeli lobby is pushing us into war in Iran, it got written up by an independent media person. I sent it out to all of the Maryland press, and I immediately got a call from a top political columnist in the state who said that he totally agreed with me, and that he said, it's amazing you have the courage to speak about this issue. You'll be labeled anti-Semitic, David Duke, extremist, wacko, nut, if you get any attention at all. He says, I'm going to use your view to write about this issue that I'm not really able to write about in any other way. So I think if he starts to write about it, which I expect may happen this week or next, that will be a breakthrough. And then if it breaks through with someone like him writing it, I'm not going to mention his name until he writes the column. So, but when if he does go through what he says and writes the column, he will that will set off a real opportunity for mainstream coverage, and I think that will be a breakthrough moment. So I think that, and I've also mentioned, I've sat down with the top political editor at the Baltimore Sun. He recognizes he needs to cover me more. So I think that's going to change. I've gotten a lot of, if you Google my name, Zeese, you'll see a lot of several hundred thousand hits, and there's always if you go to news.google and look for media stories, you'll see a bunch of media stories as well. I got a lot of web coverage. And what's interesting about media right now is print media and TV news are both dropping.
Yes, they are.
And, you know, print media's top circulation was back in 1984 when they had about 65 million people reading the newspaper every day. That's now down to 42 million and dropping by 2% a year.
Yeah.
And that's being picked up by the web. So, I mean, we may not have reached a tipping point yet, but very soon I think we're going to see the traditional media over eclipsed by the new media, the web media. And so I think I'm getting a lot of coverage there, and I think that's a step in the right direction. So I think I'm going to be breaking. I'm getting better coverage than most third party candidates get. I can tell you that. It's still not the fair coverage. Still not enough coverage, but I'm getting better than most of the party candidates.
Well, you are, and you know, I've actually talked to you about Karen Kotowski, who's not very far from you. I think she's in Virginia, but she's
right.
Still a neighbor of yours.
Right.
A wonderfully well-respected person on the net, and if you go to Lou Rockwell, she's always been a real sane voice in this craziness that we're facing.
I've heard her stuff. I know she does a lot.
Well, I urge you to get in touch with her, because I know that she would be. She's a long-time libertarian. By the way, I haven't told my listeners often this, but I'm a libertarian. This is my 18th year now as a libertarian. So, I think what you're doing is definitely one of the roads we need. You know, Kevin, even if it doesn't turn out that you win this, which is your goal. The issues that you've brought up, the things you've written, the exposure you get, it will move the ball forward, both in Maryland and around your area as well.
That's how I see it. I see it as a win-win situation. I mean, if I'm advancing my cause, making progress on my cause, on all the issues I'm pushing on. I'm pushing on the issues of peace, which is the Iraq War, the Iran War, Israel-Palestine, the military-industrial complex, the issue of justice, which is the Patriot Act, the drug war, the loss of civil liberties, and the issue of democracy, which is expanding our democracy so that people have more choices and more voices, and then the issue of prosperity, which is facing up to the rich-poor divide, which is getting worse and worse because of how the government has altered, how the federal government has altered our economic system to favor, you know, a certain class of people.
Well, you know, this, the two-party system needs to be eradicated because that's how they've bought the place. And here's the interesting thing. I come out often against democracy because I'm a big believer in constitutional democracy, constitutional representation, or what we call a constitutional republic.
Right.
And that the Constitution itself is the principal format for addressing issues, and democracy is basically a local issue. But on the larger issues, we need to return to our Constitution, which has been completely gutted by both Clinton and this Bush regime. And it's interesting to note that Bill Clinton has become best friends with Daddy Bush, and he goes down to Texas all the time. And when you find out behind the scenes that the Democrats and the Republicans are different sides of the same coin, I'm wondering how long it's going to take for the mainstream public to wake up to the ruse that we've all been suffering under.
Right. Well, I think the public is starting to wake up to it, and you can see in those polls I mentioned earlier. You can see
voter
registration. What I do in my when I talk around the state about politics is I conclude by saying I'm asking voters to do one very simple thing, and that is vote for what you believe in. Vote for what you want. Don't get fooled by this two-party straitjacket. And I compare it to when my kids were growing up. I'm 51 years old, and I have two adult kids now. And when they were 5 years old and 8 years old, or three and six, whatever their ages were, they were doing something we didn't want them to do. Let's call it C. I would say, hey, guys, why don't you do A or B? And they would stop and say, oh, A or B, let me make that choice. I got a choice. Dad, give me a choice, A or B. Of course,
mm-hmm.
I really made the choice for them by denying them C.
You bet.
And that's the kind of trick that's happening, I think, to voters. We're,
that's right.
We're being treated like children. We're given the choice of A candidate or B candidate, both of whom support the war, both of whom support the Patriot Act, both of whom want to attack Iran, both of whom won't raise questions about Israel-Palestine, both of whom deny third-party access,
mm-hmm.
both of whom want limited candidates in debate, and, et cetera. Down the line, neither one will challenge the rich-poor divide. So you have these phony choices. And then they have these issues, like I think the immigration issue right now is being used this way, and so is the gay marriage issue, and the abortion issue has been used this way in the past.
It's a wedge issue, and they basically use it to divide.
Exactly, and that creates the divide between A and B. But the real issues, the economic, military, foreign policy issues that really affect everyone's life, they agree on.
Well, I think you're right, and they've used this this group, this 26 million strong Christian Zionist group that has what Bush calls it his base, but the Democrats have their own, and some of them have come from some of the parties you're actually talking about, and chiefly the Greens and others have been kind of co-opted in some instances into Democrats. And now
I agree.
And
I worked with Ralph Nader in 2004.
Yep.
And a lot of the Nader supporters in the Green Party felt like the Democrats were co-opted when they chose David Cobb, who's a decent guy, and he's actually endorsed my campaign, but who was obviously seen as someone who would not be a challenge to the Democrats. And,
right.
A lot of the Greens supported Cobb because they didn't want to challenge Democrats in 2004, so I think that was a bit of a co-option by the Democrats and the Greens, and hopefully the Greens have learned the lesson and will stiffen their back and challenge both of these two corporate military parties.
Well, Eric and myself and others that are associated with me have been trying to expose world Zionism, not just American Zionism, but this push to it's almost like an enslavement in many ways, because we're losing our basic freedoms. We're getting fewer choices when it comes to water, gas, travel, everything. The world's oligarchy is kind of closing in around our lives, and it's becoming a global movement. These people want a single world government, and so I'm starting to see this stuff come into formation here, and it's a frightening prospect to think that in the years to come, America could just be absorbed into the control of a single-minded group. And we've put the finger on the fact that in many cases, or in most cases, it's the same group. And we're angry about this, Kevin.
I think what's really interesting about that to me, how I see it developing, which is it's not the Zionist issue as much as it's the corporate globalization issue. because you know they do it under the ruse of free trade. Now, I favor free trade too. I want to see trade between people. I'm not against trade. But these so-called free trade agreements really aren't free trade agreements. What they really are is corporate empowerment agreements, and they're creating multinational corporations as the power in the world,
mm-hmm.
more powerful than government.
Mm-hmm.
If the government passes an environmental law, for example, the corporations, the multinational, can go to the WTO, the World Trade Organization, and claim that that law is a restraint on trade and challenge that law.
Yep.
Giving the corporate powers greater power than the government. Since I figured out actually even more than the I don't expect to see a kind of an EU of the world or a UN becoming a real. I don't see that. I just don't see the politics there for that at this point. Maybe you know in 200 years, you know we'll have a more enlightened governments around the world, more empowered people around the world, and we can come up with something that works that way. But. At this point, I don't see the politics for that. And,
well, I do see if America goes down the drain.
But I see corporate power as as the ruse for that right now.
Well, you see, here's the interesting problem, though, because the European Union and the American Union, as it's turning out to be, are both walking lockstep with one another, and you can see it in this Iranian debacle coming up. You can see it in so many places in the world, and basically what it is a Western, Occidental, corporate, and I believe Zionist, inspired. And if you take a look at why I think that, if you take a look at our Federal Reserve control and ownership, it's under the same group, a single group. And if you take a look at the ECB, they are the same people controlling the Federal Reserve. Now, that's not a coincidence, Kevin.
Right. I agree.
The person that controls the money supply controls the debate.
I agree. And see, that's all part of the corporate governance. I totally agree with you on that. And you can see it in the disconnect between the Federal Reserve pronouncing the economy so strong in the United States and the people not feeling that way.
And
the disconnect is because they measure different things than what people feel. They don't measure median family income going down. They don't mention. They don't measure poverty going up. They don't measure. Health insurance not being affordable. They don't mention measure pensions being disappearing. What they measure is productivity is up. What that means is either there's less workers or workers are getting paid less.
That's right.
You know, they talk about growth of the economy, but they don't talk about how it's the top 5% where the growth is occurring, and everyone else is suffering. And so there's a real disconnect between how the Federal Reserve types, the bankers who are, behind this, and the corporations who are behind this, measure economic growth compared to what the people really need.
How would you feel about returning to a U.S. Treasury-backed dollar rather than the Federal Reserve?
I think something like that would make sense. I'd also want to see the Federal Reserve, if we continue it, totally change. It needs to be democratized. We don't need to have appointed bankers. We need to have elected people controlling the money supply. If we're going to have a money supply in a central bank like the Federal Reserve, it needs to be totally redone. It's not the way it's working right now. It does not serve the interests of the people. It serves the interests of the elite.
Well, you're right on that score as well. You know, the research I do, and of course, some of my issues I don't want to actually throw on your lap, Kevin, because it's not necessary in this particular debate to do that in particular interview. However, I do want to tell you that I think things are more dire than maybe. Maybe even you're willing to talk about, or not willing, but maybe that you see. I think there's a financial calamity on our horizon, and I think it could be a profound change in the way that all Americans live their lives. And I don't think it's long in coming.
I think that's very possible. And I'm not good at predicting the future. I'm not sure I'll even have for dinner tonight. But as far as our financial situation, I do see potential for dire consequences. We are so in debt at various levels, not just the federal government deficit, but also the international trade deficit and people's personal debt.
Well, so where we have negative savings rate, Kevin.
Negative savings, and so people are. That's a very fragile situation. We see the world environment and the oil supply and the power of the oil supply on the value of the dollar. When you look at rising China and the Soviet, the Russian economy, I mean, these big economies in the world, and their impact on us, I think we are in a very precarious state.
Yep.
You know, one of my opponents in this race, Ben Cardin, who's a congressman who's very much a Zionist, by the way, who totally supports Israel no matter what they want, He's saying that he thinks we should threaten China with economic sanctions if they block a military action in Iran. Now, that is like, what are you, crazy? They own us, and you want to threaten them?
Well, they're holding most of our paper, them and the Japanese.
That's what I mean. It's crazy.
I mean, these people don't understand that who's in control in a relationship where one person owes and the other person holds the, you know. I mean, especially in a fiat system like we've developed.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So I think we got some real problems, and they're growing big. And obviously, we only cover a small amount of this in this interview. I hope people will visit a couple of websites that I have. One is my Senate campaign site, which is Zees for Senate. That's Zeese for Senate.org.
Yeah.
And the other one is my anti-war site, which is democracyrising.us.
Mm-hmm.
We'll visit that. And by the way, also we're trying something new, by the way, which your listeners might be interested in participating, which is kind of an empowering process. We want this campaign to be one that's of, by, and for the people. So we've set up a wiki campaign site. You've heard of Wikipedia where people...
Yes.
We're doing a wiki campaign site called Zeese.us, and it's a site where people can come in and help develop policy, help self-organize campaign events, you know, give campaign advice, and a real self-organizing, self-empowering kind of a site for a campaign. So we're trying that as a new tool, and we'll see what kind of work it gets out of people to see if they get interested in really taking back the government by becoming participators in our democracy, because that's what we really need, is people getting active and involved. There's enough people in this country, we can take our government back. But
I believe it's possible, but I'm going to tell you, it's not going to be pain-free, huh?
Of course not. No. Certain change never is.
No, and the first thing...
The pain will be worse if we don't do it.
Well, you're right, and here's the first thing has to be done is that we first have to acknowledge that the people are pulling the strings behind George Bush. He's a meat puppet, and I use that term. It's almost a rude term, but he really is a meat puppet. And so was the last campaign when Kerry ran against him. And I mean, in every instance, these people from behind the scenes are pulling the strings. And I'm wondering how long it's going to take before we actually identify those string pullers.
That's a really good question. And, I hope they do get exposed, because I think that is the key. And,
well, that's what we do.
That's what
the French Connection does, and I don't shrink from the challenge. And the last question I'm going to have for you. You know, you've had a long-standing relationship with Ralph Nader, and you and I both know I've had Ralph on several times on my show. How is Ralph's efforts right now in the world? I know that you mentioned he lost his mom recently, but is he planning on getting back in full swing to this fight?
Oh, he's never left the fight. What happens, of course, is the media doesn't cover him.
Yes.
So people don't know he's in the fight, but he's now left the fight, even during this difficult period of his mother's death, which hit him harder than anything else I've seen hit him, by the way. You know, this guy has been hit hard by political opponents in the last 8 years, since 2000 and before.
Mm-hmm.
Started challenging the Democratic Party, getting in the electoral arena, he's been really attacked hard. I'll tell you this, losing his mother was much harder than all of those attacks combined. But he's definitely back into it. He's never actually left it. He writes a weekly column. He runs a half dozen or more organizations. I talk with him almost daily about how to stop the Iraq war. He's pushing all sorts of ideas on, like for example, because of his efforts, his leadership, there's going to be at the week after the 2,500th death, there'll be more than 2,500 churches and other religious groups ringing bells
mm-hmm.
in remembrance of the 2,500 soldiers.
Well, make sure you remember that 25,000 are going to die in the next 5 years from DU poisoning.
And several hundred thousand Iraqis have died. I mean,
Boy, unbelievable, Kevin. I the biggest crime committed by America is not against its own people. It's against these Iraqis. These people have been victimized in ways that I can't even look at because it makes me too sick.
That's right. And we're going in the wrong direction on so many of these issues. You know, I mentioned to you before our radio interview the bioweapons facility that was
yes.
In Fort Detrick, Maryland, the largest bioweapons facility in the world, a 220-acre campus bringing together Homeland Security, Department of Defense, Department of Agriculture, National Institute of Health, other federal agencies. And, one, give you a sense of the scope of it. One building, the Army building, is going to be 22 acres in size. This Sunday, we'll be doing an event in Frederick at Bradley Park at the bandstand at noon. to oppose the expansion of Fort Detrick. Now that is a crazy move because it's going to kick off a bioweapons arms race, and definitely decrease the safety of Americans and people around the world by having such an arms race. And you know, their strategy for defending us is to create new bioweapons and new methods of deploying those bioweapons, because they say the only way to defend it is to create it. And, I mean, to me, that's insane.
It is insane.
So that's the process. That's the direction our country is going. I agree with you, Darrell. In my 51 years, this is the more we're going in more wrong directions now than we've gone at any other time. It's amazing that the country is holding together.
Well, you know something, your efforts are laudable, and I wish you all the luck in the world with this fight. You know that you have my support in that. I know you're an honorable man, Kevin, and I the research that I'm doing is pointing to these people, and I'm glad that you've made some statements regarding the whole fight that I'm involved in, and I appreciate your efforts. I just really do. I know you've got other things to do. You're a very busy guy. I want to wish you all the best with your campaign.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to ask you to give out your websites once again, so everybody listening to this broadcast are able to go and take a look at your information.
It's zeeseforsenate.org, and it's easier because zeese rhymes with peace, and our campaign animal is geese. So it's zeese for senate.org, and our wiki site is zeese.us. And I'd love to have your input on helping develop the policies there.
Mm-hmm.
And my anti-war site is democracyrising.us. Democracyrising.us. So I look forward to having people online and involved in all that work.
Well, it's going to go out on my site and probably several others as well. And I appreciate you coming on the French Connection today, Kevin.
Thank you.
And I'll be talking to you soon, my friend.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right, sir. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Zeese, Senate candidate for the great state of Maryland. Of course, we discussed so many subjects in this little half-hour segment here, but the things that we did discuss are important because, you know, there are people thinking that the whole country can't be saved and maybe they should just throw the whole mess out. And there are others, like Kevin, who think that, you know, his effort can maybe bring us back from the brink of complete and disaster in the nation and another war. At the very minimum, I believe Kevin's going to push forward certain arguments here. He's going to push forward certain important revelations that he has talked about, especially about the Israeli lobby and about things that are happening. And, of course, U.S. Senate's a tough slog, and he's going to have a lot of money thrown against him. And it's a difficult uphill battle for him. I urge you to take a look at his information and you decide whether he's the kind of candidate you would like to have. But I can tell you that in many ways he's trying to fight the same fight we are. You know, we're more cutting edge than Kevin is in some ways because, of course, we're doing the front line investigations here. We're pushing the envelope. And in many ways, we've got information being provided on our site that no one else has, including Kevin. So, if he doesn't seem as up to date on some of the issues that we discuss daily on the French Connection, it is certainly not by any means indicative of his interest in having other things change, in fact, and have those things fixed. And he did point out that we need to find out those string pullers from behind, and that's exactly what we do. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in today's French Connection. My name again is Darrell Bradford Smith, and it is the Thursday broadcast here on the French Connection. Keep fighting, ladies and gentlemen. This is not going to be won all at once. This is a daily battle, a slog, as it were. And if we don't fight every day to try to bring our country back from this precipice, it's just going to descend into anarchy. It's going to descend into chaos. It's going to descend into depression, suffering, and problems that you and I, oh boy, we don't want to live through that period. It may happen regardless. It may happen without our best efforts. It may happen anyway. I hope that that isn't the case. I fear the worst, actually. But please, take a look at the stuff and tune in for tomorrow's show. I have not decided who we're going to have on yet, but it will be another important bit of information for everyone. So please tune in then. Thank you very much and be well. Bye-bye.